This episode is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. Experienced wealth managers who go above and beyond to guide and support you. CanDo is more than just an attitude. It's navigating today for a brighter tomorrow. Visit candowealth.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Scots. I'm Katie Balls, and today I'm joined by Fraser Nelson, Stephen Daisy, and Michael Simmons. To kick us off, we've just had the S&P leadership announcement. I think to no great surprise, Humza Yousaf has won, but it was on second preference votes. So Michael, could you just run us through how the vote shook out?
Absolutely. So in the first round of voting, Humza Yousaf did win with about 24,000 votes, but that was not enough to get through on the first round because Forbes got just under 21,000 and then Ash Reagan got about 5,500. So those votes transferred in the second round, and then Yousaf ended up winning with 26,000 to Forbes's 24,000, which works out at that golden ratio, 52-48. But I think what's interesting about the results is that only about 50,000 members voted, which is a turnout of 70%. And when you think that it was an online election and it's pretty easy to vote, it's maybe a bit surprising that that many people didn't vote.
So, Stephen, we have a 52-48. Are you surprised by that margin, the fact it was, you know, particularly if you think about all the efforts by the S&P machinery, really, to try and shore up Humza Yousaf, he doesn't have a clearer lead?
Oh, yeah, 52-48%. That's a ratio that always spells calm times ahead. I think that probably they were expecting this to be more of a comprehensive victory for Humza Yousaf. I think the point about turnout as well is really interesting because, I mean, yes, it was 70% turnout this time with, you know, electronic voting. If you go back to the last SNP leadership election, that was in 2004 when Alex Salmond came back, the turnout then was 79%. And that was when they were out of government. In this election, they are obviously in government, have been for 16 years. We're voting to replace their most successful leader, Nicola Sturgeon, and still about, you know, just under a third of SNP members didn't want to take part in that. Now, whether that was the sort of rancorous and fractious nature of the campaign or they didn't like the candidates that were on offer, who knows? But I think that is a really interesting figure. But you know, the headline of 52-48%, you know, it's not particularly resounding. I think that is spoken to by the fact that Humza Yousaf quite quickly in his acceptance speech started to talk about healing divisions and bringing the party together. And in fact, he said that immediately after he was finished answering journalists' questions, he would be sitting down with Kate Forbes and Ash Regan, which, you know, again, as I said, in this a pretty bitter leadership election, you know, at one point during this election, Kate Forbes, you know, even suggested that she would, you know, effectively sack Humza Yousaf as health secretary if she won. So I think that it's sort of telling that he is sort of very quickly starting to talk about bringing the party together, because that ratio of 52-48 does suggest, you know, a party that is pretty divided.
So Fraser, picking up on what Stephen was just saying, do you think this means that Humza Yousaf has much of a mandate or even much authority over his party?
Well, a lot of leadership elections where votes are redistributed normally end up tight. And I think it's, you know, a win is a win. And I don't think he's going to be seen as a wounded candidate because it was 52-48 as opposed to a bigger margin. I'm actually astonished at how well Kate Forbes did, given that, you know, she started the campaign by talking about her faith positions, which in a lot of people's eyes would disqualify her. I mean, Ruth Davidson was saying that Kate Forbes has just blown up her campaign. She wouldn't get anywhere. In fact, she fought a very professional and effective campaign, and had it gone on for a bit longer, she might even have won. I'd be very interested to see what Kate Forbes does now. Is she going to serve under Humza Yousaf, or is she going to continue her maternity leave, or in fact just go back to being a backbencher? It wouldn't surprise me if she decides to do that and sits out. After all, Yousaf is rather accident prone, and a lot of his detractors would think that he's going to be a sort of Liz Truss style wrecking ball swinging along in his party, a gaff machine who's going to be out in 9 months, leaving Kate Forbes to pick up the baton yet again. Now, I've got no idea if that's going to happen or not, but certainly if you did envisage Yusuf being a debacle, you'd want to keep a safe distance from that leadership. So that might be what Kate does. Certainly, I think it's safe to say that he is a unionist's candidate. When the first round of voting got through, I imagine many unionists thought, my word, what if Ash Reagan's second preference votes were to go for Kate Forbes? I mean, a lot of people thought that that was what would happen. So when we first saw that first round of votes, it was plausible that Kate Forbes would make it over the line. So I think, I know that Stevens argued this as well, that the unionist's best candidate has won. And therefore, if you're a unionist, you should be pretty pleased by the way things have gone today.
Yes, Stephen, what do you think this means for the Scottish Tories and Labour? Ultimately, as Fraser makes the point, I think Yusuf is seen as a candidate that both parties can live with. But had Kate Forbes won, you could have had a situation when perhaps some more socially progressive voters who didn't like some of Kate Forbes' comments on, you know, gay marriage and so forth might have moved to Scottish Labour.
I mean, Kate Forbes was the candidate that the opposition, certainly people in the opposition parties that I spoke to, she was the candidate they didn't want to win, particularly the Scottish Tories, though I have to say even in Labour there were, you know, real concerns about her. And the problem, you know, with Kate Forbes was, from the perspective of the opposition, here was someone who is, on a kind of personal religious level, a social conservative. She's also something of a fiscal moderate. But, you know, her kind of political pitch in this election camp, this leadership election campaign, was not so much vote for me to advance independence, it was vote for me because I want to eradicate poverty. And, you know, she was putting social justice at the kind of at the front and centre of her campaign. So, you know, from both a Labour perspective and a Tory perspective in Scotland, you know, Kate Forbes could have been real trouble. Hamza Yusuf was more explicitly, I wouldn't say centre-left. I mean, I think like Nicola Sturgeon, he is rhetorically a centre-left politician. And also like Nicola Sturgeon, yes, you could, you know, maybe see, you know, a little uptick in taxation here and there. Nothing hugely radical. But in terms of like, you know, substance, you're not gonna, I don't think he's going to do anything transformative economically. For the Tories, I mean, they probably will see his victory as a lifeline for them, not even so much because of the economics, but more because, you know, because the result has so close that, you know, Hamza Yusuf is going to have to sort of start to make noises for people who, you know, in its grassroots are really, really impatient for independence. And, you know, that is going to, you know, hamper his ability to, you know, be the first minister for all of Scotland that he was talking about in his victory speech. It's sort of difficult for Hamza Yusuf now because he, on the one hand, he has to convince this. I mean, on the first, you know, preferences alone, 41%. Voted for Kate Forbes and 11% for Ash Regan. So, you know, he obviously has a lot of work to do within his own party, but in reassuring them, and the obvious issue in which to appeal to them seems to be independence, does he risk pushing away others? There's also the question of his, you know, legacy as Health Secretary, that Anna Sarwar, the Scottish Labour leader, has been hammering away at for a long time. And so, you know, this is a First Minister who has a, you know, he does have a track record of not just policy delivery failures, but also embarrassing political gaffes. So I think both Scottish Labour and the Scottish Tories essentially got the result they wanted today.
And Fraser, Hamza Yusuf was very much seen as the continuity candidate. So can we expect much to change?
Has Kate Forbes won this, she would have taken a broom and swept up the stables of the SNP hierarchy. A hierarchy, by the way, whose implosion we saw midway through the campaign, where the chief executive, Peter Murrell, Nicola Sturgeon's husband, had to resign basically after having been found out trying to cover up a 30% fall in SNP membership numbers. They've had complete power for quite a while, and that shows in slightly decayed structures. And of course, the SNP hierarchy chose Hamza Yusuf. They all got together in the beginning of the campaign and decided who was going to be their official candidate. Was it going to be Angus Robertson or Yusuf? And they went for the latter. So he is likely to dance with the ones who brung him, as it were. And I think he will not be implementing the kind of root and branch reform that Kate Forbes was going to do. But there's one other thing which does strike me about all this. And it's something which I think as a country we quite rightly don't really mention because it's not important. But if you believe in a multi-faith democracy, as I do, then there's something striking about the fact that we've now got a Muslim Scottish First Minister, a Hindu British Prime Minister, a Buddhist Home Secretary, a Muslim Mayor of London. These are positions which you would not really expect to see in the rest of Western Europe. Rishi Sunak has got a Ganesh, a little Muslim idol, on his desk, and I struggle to imagine an American president doing the same way or producing as little comment in America as it would do here. So if you so that's something which, to me anyway, is a source of national pride. There's a huge bunch of things I think I love about this country. And our ability, our boast of being the greatest melting pot in the Western world, I think, is one of these things, and we can see it reflected in the S&P vote today.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you, Michael. Don't let the green grass fool you. Don't.